Hello, everyone, and welcome to Qualitative Conversations, a podcast of the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group of the American Educational Research Association. I am Jessica Lester, the current chair of the Qualitative Research SIG. Today, I'm honored to be joined by Dr. Lisa Matsei, who will be sharing about thinking with theory and qualitative inquiry. Dr. Matsei is an associate professor in the Department of Education Studies, an affiliated faculty member in the Department of Philosophy, and the program director for the Critical and Sociocultural Studies in Education doctoral program at the University of Oregon in the United States. Her research with white teachers and engagement with philosophical concepts has resulted in a body of work that considers silence in qualitative inquiry and the mapping of inquiry as a process methodology. She is the author of Inhabited Silence in Qualitative Research, published by Peter Lang. She's the co-editor of Voice in Qualitative Inquiry, which was published by Routledge. And she's the co-author of Thinking with Theory in Qualitative Research, also published by Routledge. In collaboration with Alicia Jackson, Lisa focuses on thinking with theory as a new analytic for qualitative inquiry. She is also the former program co-chair of the Qualitative Research SIG and also the current immediate past chair. Welcome, Lisa. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Jessica. I really appreciate the invitation.
Lisa, your concept with Alicia Jackson, Thinking with Theory, has certainly been one that has been taken up by many qualitative scholars and is certainly one that I hear often graduate students gravitate towards. So I appreciate you sharing with us today. I think that this podcast will be something we'll all learn a great deal from. Can you just share a little bit around the origins of the idea or concept of thinking with theory?
Yeah, I guess to start with, I don't think that the use of theory to look at qualitative data in different ways is something that Alicia and I have invented. But I think what we did do is we provided some mechanism for naming it, allowing, particularly I think doctoral students, as you mentioned, giving them some tools for saying, this is my methodological process or my analytic process. And so that's something that that I think our work has done in terms of the book. And then we've got a chapter in the most recent SAGE Handbook of Qualitative Inquiry. But it's interesting. We were at ICQI, International Congress of Qualitative Inquiry, some years ago. I'm not sure how many now. And we were talking about, Alicia and I were talking about our own teaching and how we struggled to find some exemplars that we could use with students in trying to get them to think about doing analysis differently. Mm-hmm. And so we were perusing the book exhibit and looking for texts that talked about analysis. And what we found was primarily the texts that had analysis in the title or said that they focus on analysis dealt with coding. And while we're not opposed to coding, we see that as sort of the beginning process of analysis, not an end point. And we started talking about a text that we would like to have to use with our own students and what it might look like. And we had a conversation with the editor that we had worked with for our previous book together. And we came up with the idea that we wanted to show how you could take a concept and use it to open up a different set of questions or a different way of looking at data. And we wanted to also demonstrate that there was not just one way of looking at data. And part of this from our own work, because you mentioned my work on silence earlier, and I had started, starting with my dissertation, but did a lot of work using the concept of deconstruction to theorize silence and to think about silence as data. But then I got stuck because I was trying to think about in this research with white teachers, why did these silences persist? And then I started, through kind of circumstances, I started reading and thinking with Deleuze and Deleuze's idea of desire and production. And so it gave me a different way to think about why the silences persisted. And so this idea of, in the book, Thinking with Theory, is we wanted to take the same data set and show how there were different not that there were different definitive answers, but there were different questions and different ways we could look at what was going on. And so that was sort of what led to the project and how we envisioned it. And of course, our thinking on it changed a lot as we were working on the book, but that was the basic premise of the work.
So what does it look or feel or sound like to think with theory?
That's a really good question. I think, and we may have written this somewhere, we think about thinking with theory as, okay, if Derrida was looking at this data, or Foucault, or Judith Butler, what would be the kinds of questions that they would be asking? And we kind of liken it to, you know, like as you're thinking about a project or looking at data, feeling like this person's looking over your shoulder and kind of having a conversation with you. And so to use the example of Foucault in this study we did with first generation academic women, we went to Foucault's concept of power and how power circulates. And so there were moments in the data where we looked at how do we think about not what the women are telling us about their experience, but how we can use this concept of power as a way to begin to kind of complicate the relationships that these women have with their colleagues, with their partners, with administrators, and the way in which this opens up, like I say, a different, it opens up the possibility of different questions and different thought.
Mm-hmm. That example was really helpful. Just as a follow-up, are there any examples that you might offer that perhaps one of your recent graduate students has worked with in their dissertation work?
Yes, I have a current student that I'm supervising, and she did an ethnographic study, and she's looking at a student success initiative at a large university, first year of the student success initiative. And she used the concept, or not just even the concept, but thinking with assemblage theory to look at how the students are produced as part of this assemblage because of the way data is functioning to demonstrate whether or not the students are successful according to the metrics of GPA, courses taken per term, other risk factors. And so looking at the assemblage and looking at the students as, the students and the staff as being mired in this rather than focusing on individual experiences of what this success initiative looks like. Is that a helpful example?
It's a really helpful example.
Okay. And I'm just trying to think about some, I'm working on a project right now, and I've been trying to think about the way in which, I think the way in which sometimes qualitative findings, if you will, are marginalized because they're positioned by folks as being situational. Mm-hmm. And again, this idea of assemblage or of a collective, the concept of a collective helps me look at the way in which narratives are not just the product of an individual situation sometimes, but they are part of a larger problem or conversation. I'm thinking in terms of a popular example most recently of the incident in Philadelphia where a lot of individuals is to just target Starbucks and look at how Starbucks needs to do bias training and Starbucks practices are racist. And I want to look at this as part of a larger collective and say, this is, okay, here's this example, but what happens if we treat this as a narrative, not of this situation, but as speaking from, I mean, this is Deleuze and Guattari's terms, not mine, but as a collective enunciation, not an individual utterance.
That's a really powerful example. The Qualitative Research Special Interest Group was established in 1987 to provide a space within the American Educational Research Association for the discussion of philosophical, ethical, and methodological issues in qualitative research. We invite you to consider joining the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group today. For members of the American Educational Research Association, the annual fee for joining the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group for regular, non-graduate student members is $10, and the annual fee for graduate students is $5. As members of the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group, you will gain access to a network of fellow qualitative scholars, as well as our many activities, ranging from mentoring opportunities to our exciting new podcast series, to updates and news related to recent qualitative publications and jobs. Please visit the American Educational Research Association's website at www.aera.net to join the Qualitative Research SIG today. So for those that might be new to this idea of thinking with theory in qualitative inquiry, where would you suggest they start? Where are some useful starting places?
I think a useful starting place is, and I'm thinking about particularly in my work with students, is what is something, I think it requires or it necessitates a familiarity with a concept or a theorist. And so who is someone that you have been reading that is provoking your thinking, that's producing a set of questions that are not coming from your own experience or your own look at your research project, but that it helps you, shift the focus a bit, shift the questioning a bit. And so that's one of the things, and Alicia and I talked about this, when we talk about thinking with theory, it requires first, a good handle on a theoretical concept or a particular sort of epistemological or ontological position. And so I think the first thing is maybe start with what you know and try that. And so you've got a student that's working on a project where they're looking at materiality in schools and the way in which maybe the materials that hang on the walls say as much about the values of the school as what the teachers and the staff say. So what is somebody that they're reading that they can sort of put together? I mean, that's the idea of plugging in and see not what do I think about what's happening, but how do I look at this phenomena through this different lens or this with this different set of questions. I think one of the things is it's not necessarily, I mean, I've been asked before, what comes first, the theory or the data or the problem? And I think it's seeing what emerges together in the middle of it. That's what Alicia and I talk about is the threshold. And I also say to people, if you're, let's just go back to the Foucault example. Let's say you're working with Foucault and it's not doing anything for you, then maybe that's the cue that you need another concept to work with. And that's sort of back to the example I gave of my own work. I think I exhausted Derrida, at least in terms of how I was thinking about silence and naming silence and considering it differently as having some meaning and purpose and saying something to me in the context of the research texts. But then it wasn't doing anything else for me. And I also remember when I started trying to mobilize Deleuze in thinking about this and had several conversations with Maggie McClure, who's at Manchester Metropolitan University. And, you know, her question to me was, you know, what is Deleuze helping you do that Derrida doesn't, or, you know, whoever the theorist or whatever the concept. And so that would be my question to someone else is, if you find something that helps you do something that you weren't able to do, then that maybe is a signal to you that that's a good direction to follow. If this other concept isn't helping you do anything different, then maybe you just need to keep working with what you've got. I don't know if that's a good answer to your question, or if you want to add.
I think those are really helpful questions that I can see as almost I hesitate using the word framework, but a way to guide you at least in moving forward. Mm-hmm. I hear in a lot of your examples, though, a commitment to being a reader, being a student, mm-hmm. A student of philosophy. Can you talk a little bit about that and the importance of sitting with concepts, so to speak?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was very fortunate. That was what was modeled and presented to me in my own doctoral training. And I went to graduate school at Ohio State, and I remember my first entry qualitative class with Patty Lather, and I was completely out of my element because I had never studied philosophy before. And we were reading research exemplars, but we were looking at philosophical concepts and epistemological assumptions and all of this that made my head hurt. But it also ignited me, and really it made me want to learn more. And so I went to some continental philosophy conferences as a doctoral student, and I started reading some with students who were in grad school with me at the time. And yes, I think that's something that is necessary in doing this work. It's something that I support in my own teaching with students. And so when I teach, students in the sequence that we have at the University of Oregon, we talk about research design and data collection and analysis through the trajectory of the courses, and each course deals with a particular kind of philosophical frame. And so we're always reading primary texts, research exemplars, and then looking at some research design. So that's something that I try to model in my teaching. And then even in the Thinking with Theory book, Alicia and I, here's how we did our analysis, but then we also at the end of each chapter provide here's some primary texts that we read in doing this work. Here are some secondary texts that we have found to be helpful. And I'll also say this to folks when you're beginning, and I do this if I'm tackling some new texts that I'm finding difficult, is I often read a secondary text and a primary text alongside one another if I can find a good one. Mm-hmm. And then we presented some research exemplars which try to show how people are putting the theory to work. And I mean, that's the bottom line, is putting it to work. And we're working, I mean, it's going to be a couple of years. We have a contract to do a second edition, or a revised edition, really. And one of the things that we're really going to focus on in that is to beef up the search exemplars, because there's a lot of good new work out there that we can point to since the book has been published.
That sounds fantastic. Lisa, I'm sure that many of our listeners would be interested in reading more of your work. I'm sure that many will be looking out, certainly will be looking for that revised edition. But in the meantime, where might be the best place for people to learn about your ongoing scholarship?
Well, my university website is not very up to date, but I do have a profile on ResearchGate, and a lot of my articles, I have got text PDFs uploaded, or if folks contact me directly through that, if there are publications that I'm not able to upload because of copyright, I can send PDFs to people individually. So that I'm happy to do that. And then like I mentioned, the most recent handbook, I think it's the fifth edition of the SAGE handbook. Alicia and I have a chapter in there that if people haven't read Thinking with Theory and they want to be introduced to the idea in a shorter text, we've got a chapter in there. But also, if you've read Thinking with Theory, we talk about how we're moving in some of our work to talk about really analysis as thought, and so we develop that idea in that chapter. So those would be two places I would point people.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Lisa, again for joining me today. It really has been a pleasure to learn from you.
Well, thank you, Jessica. I've enjoyed talking with you, and I've appreciated the thoughtful questions.
Take care.